This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh boy, this is so exciting. I'm going to hold up the book to the camera because it is so beautiful, and I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper Daniel Jose Older, and the name of his book is Last Canto of the Dead, an Outlaw Saints novel. And hi, Daniel.
Hi, good morning. How are you doing?
Okay, great. Well, I am holding up this book, and it is a beautiful book, isn't it?
Isn't that cover something? I love it.
Well, you
did amazing work.
I always, when I find a book like this, beautiful cover, beautiful paper, I always say, well, somebody up there loves you. And in your case, somebody up there on Olympus loves you because the gods are with you here. And that is because, of course, this is another selection from the brilliant genius Rick Riordan. And he knows how to pick writers. And when he picked you, boy, oh boy, did he hit the jackpot.
Thank you so much. And it's truly, first of all, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you so much for having me. And yes, what an honor. Rick Riordan is just a hero, you know, of mine. I think of so many people. He's such an amazing writer and such an amazing person. You know, to do this imprint where he's really uplifting other voices and other stories, it's the greatest thing. And I'm just so happy and excited to be part of it.
Well, I always love his books. Of course, I love his books, and I love all of the authors that he has selected over the years. And as I'm sort of shaking this this book in my hand because it sparkles, and I get such a kick out of it. I mean, it's embossed, and it's shiny silver embossed. It's beautiful. A lovely illustration. Really great.
Yes.
And, of course, New York Times best-selling author right there on the cover. That must make you feel pretty good.
It sure does. It doesn't get old. Every time I see that, I'm like, yep, that's me. I did that.
That's you. You certainly have done it. And I want to say that one of the things I of course, we'll talk about your main characters in a minute. We'll talk about everybody. Mm-hmm. But I want to say particularly about Mateo, who is a pianist.
Uh-huh.
And
yes.
I certainly wish he had played at my bat mitzvah.
Me too. Me too. Absolutely. Because, wow.
Wow.
What a skilled young man.
Now, are you a pianist?
Not as good as Mateo. I'm definitely a musician, and I can kind of manage on piano. I play bass mostly. Really what I love doing is writing music. So it's in me. But I'm not as skilled as he is.
Well, it's just... when I read that, I thought, oh yeah, that would have been terrific. So, I will let you explain this entire concept, because it is brilliant, and it is so wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
And your writing, you know, I often, you know, one of the things they always write, you know, about an author, they'll say, lyrical writing. Now, not everybody is lyrical writing, but... You really are lyrical writing, and it must come from this love of music, because there is a certain, I don't know, when I got into it, I started realizing that there's something about the way you form your sentences, the way you put together the paragraphs, there is a pattern to it that is musical.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true. That's absolutely true. And I think being a musician, one of the first things you have to learn how to do to be a good musician is to listen. Listening is so important, to listen to the other people in your band, listen to your own music, and listen to the world as you take in the world to play music back out into it. And I think that's also so important for a writer. And sometimes we don't stop and listen enough, especially to our own words. You know, there's that phrase that someone loves to hear themselves talk, but are they really listening? And that's like such a key of writing. Like at its heart, writing is it goes back to the spoken word, right? It's storytelling. And so I always try to read my work out loud. Even if it's while I'm writing it, I don't always get a chance to read the whole book out loud. But it's about the sound of the word as much as it is about the meaning. That's so important.
Well, I'll let you explain what this Outlaw Saints series is about. Of course, this is a sequel to Ballad and Dagger. And this last Canto of the Dead, wow, it is terrific. It is really terrific.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy you enjoyed it. It's really a book of my heart. So the Outlaw Saints, it's a duology, right? I mean, two books, and this is the last one. This closes out the whole story. But we meet Matteo Matisse in book one, Ballad and Dagger. He's just a, 16-year-old piano prodigy trying to live his best life, but he has to tap into secret, hidden, newfound healing powers when his community gets overtaken by this ancient evil power and falls into infighting. Matteo is called upon to heal his own community, and he has to, in the meantime, fight off demons and monsters and different kind of creatures that lurk in the shadows of his lost island secret history. And the girl that he's fallen in love with murders someone right in front of his face in chapter one. So he has to figure all of that out.
Well, the two characters are so good. They're so well developed. Of course, Matteo is someone, right away I was just drawn to him. But explain about this girl, because this is interesting.
Shayla Hidalgo is, so both Matteo and Shayla kind of realize that they're actually ancient spirits. And they've known each other for centuries. Shayla is a destroyer spirit. So she's connected to this power to absolutely destroy things, but also a creator spirit at the same time. So she has all of this complexity within her, but she is also just a very regular teenage girl, like Matteo, trying to live her best life. And all of these powerful forces are moving around. And she's on this island in the middle of the Caribbean that's been underwater for 16 years. And it's her homeland, but she doesn't remember it. And there's a war breaking out between different monsters on the island. She has to figure all of that out while also just being who she is.
Whoa, this all came from, where did it come from? I mean, I think you do draw upon your background. I think you probably have a few interesting characters in your family that you've drawn into this book, like an aunt.
That's so many aunts. They're all in there somewhere. I mean, I grew up Cuban and Jewish in a house that had all these different traditions going on. We would celebrate Christmas and Hanukkah, and we just had a lot of culture and love and different types of experiences of the world all meshing together into something that always just felt like one, like very harmonious unit, even though there were different histories involved. And, and then I think the process of growing up is understanding, going deeper into those histories, family histories, world histories, all of these different things, and also understanding mythology. I've always been a mythology kid. I don't know about you, but I just read Greek myths, for fun all the time. Part of why I love Rick Riordan so much, right? And then, but there's myths in all different cultures of the world, and they're all so interesting, and they all get together and, make new myths and all that. And I love that. And so it really is about that mishmash and complexity of when different worlds collide. And sometimes it's very ugly and painful, and sometimes it's very beautiful. And all of those different pieces are in there.
Well, I also always loved mythology. As a matter of fact, when I was in school, the only subject that I loved was Latin when I got to high school.
Mm.
But before that, I had already been deeply involved in reading mythology. I love mythology. And then when I got into Latin, it was so wonderful because, it was a subject that was a challenge to me, because by the time I got to high school, I had already read 5,000 books. So it really was,
wow.
It was like a little bit ridiculous for me to take some of those classes.
Right. That's amazing.
It was really funny. One time I started an advanced literature course, and they had picked one Russian to read, and I went into the started the class. I said, "But I've read them all." And the teacher said, "What?" I said, "No, I've read them all."
Man.
And I explained that I had read you know, War and Peace when I was 11 years old. So it was a little ridiculous.
Oh my God!
But Latin, Latin was a challenge, and I loved it. And because of me, it was the only year, only time that they ever did 4 years of Latin, because I insisted that I needed to study it. And so I love mythology, and Rick has done such a wonderful thing of bringing this to life, because we read, you know, about kids who are not reading, and it is so frightening to me. I don't understand how kids cannot read. That is the joy of childhood.
It is. It is. You know, I think, because I was, when you were talking, I was thinking about my own experience with Latin, because I also love Greek myths, but I didn't like Latin class. And it's crazy, because I love language, too. But I had a teacher I didn't get along with. And I do think that can sometimes really change things. You know, Shakespeare is a great example, right? I'm absolutely in love with Shakespeare. But that happened eventually because I found someone, a teacher who loved Shakespeare, too, and gave that love to us. But when people teach it and they're just like, all right, here's your homework, you know, here, we got to slog through this, or they act like it's on this pedestal that nobody can reach. You know, people really can make literature inaccessible by the way that they tell children about it. And I think that is very dangerous.
Oh, it is. It's so important that the teachers have to love the subject. And when they love it,
they do.
Oh,
yes.
Oh. I mean, my
we
Latin teachers,
too, right? Whatever it is.
My Latin teacher spent every summer in Rome, in Italy. And so when she would come back, she would be like so excited to teach us. And of course, most of the kids, we started off in ninth grade with 22. By 10th grade, there were 15. By 11th grade, we were down to 8. And nobody really wanted fourth year except me and a few boys who were after me. So we ended up having fourth year. But that was because she was joyful. And this is what happens. Exactly. Like, you had a Shakespeare teacher. I had a third grade teacher who told me I was stupid.
And you were obviously so much ahead of the game. Like, you were so smart, but I think sometimes we don't know how to process that degree of intelligence, or different kinds of intelligence, right? Because there's so many different ways to be smart. And I mean, I experienced that too. Like, I would, there were certain classes that I couldn't thrive in, even though I was really smart, but I was completely flailing, you know, around trying to get my brain to click with them, and it wasn't working. There's so many different ways to learn.
One of the things I love is, and this is before the pandemic, when Rick was going out there talking to groups of kids, and he would go to an auditorium in a school, and he was treated like a rock star. I mean, kids screaming and yelling and, you know, so excited. Yeah. And I hope he's back to doing that, and I hope that you're doing that, because we need to get kids excited. And we know that kids can read if they are excited.
Exactly.
For goodness sakes, they read Harry Potter's 600-page books.
Right.
And I'm sure they'll be reading this book, because it's great, but we have to really have this outreach. You write so beautifully. Yes. You're, as I said, it's so, it flows, it's funny, it's action-packed, deeply thoughtful at times. All that a kid needs in a great book. And I hope that you're going to be out there too, like Rick, doing these things, getting kids excited again.
Yes, definitely, definitely. And that's the great joy of writing, besides the writing itself, which I love, is getting to see young people, especially, you know, react, find themselves in the book. And that's such a gift, you know, like, because I remember not being able to find myself in books and looking for myself, or having to translate a character into being who I was. And seeing kids, you know, not have to do that extra work and really just say, oh, that's me. Like, I saw myself. It was the first time I found myself in a book, and that book felt like home. Even if it's about magic, you know, and islands that don't exist and monsters and everything else, they can still find something that's so true that they really, that speaks to them on a human level. And seeing people realize that and have that reaction has just been the most beautiful part of my career.
Well, you know, Rick started this entire thing with Percy Jackson because his son has ADHD and he's dyslexic.
That's right.
And so he wanted to do something for his son. And it just proved that if you write and you get a kid involved, they start reading, they start loving a subject. And it is really, I worry so much when I hear about these kids in school who cannot read. I mean, they cannot read at an eighth grade level when they're coming out of high school. I don't know, what are we going to do about it? I think more and more writers have to be really actively involved, partly pushing phonics. I'm sorry, I do not want to hear any more nonsense about not learning phonics, because that's how I learned. We were poor. I learned to read from comic books. Because we didn't have books, and my mother would just run her finger under the words, and that's how we learned to read. So I was reading at 3 years old, like Beatrix Potter. And this is something important that we really, all of us who are involved in sort of the publishing world, the book world, have to get these kids reading, and they would. Really, a lot of them would just stay out of trouble. I know when I was young, I was 18, and I I remember this so well. Somebody wanted me to go to a party where I knew, you know, there would be drinking and probably some drugs and stuff. And I was in the middle. I was in the middle of a Dorothy Sayers mystery. And I thought to myself, do I want to not be able to understand this book, or do I want to continue reading? And I did. And it's really changed my life, because I didn't get involved in all sorts of nonsense, because I wanted to know the next, I wanted to know the ending of the next book.
Wanted to know what happened.
That's
right. Yeah. I remember reading, it was Fellowship of the Ring, the first book in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And I remember so distinctly, I was really young, I was, I don't know, 11 or something, and I just remember reading it, and I was totally invested in the world. And it's the scene where it's like pouring rain, and they're trying to get out of the Shire, and all these things are happening. And I looked up, and I couldn't believe that the sun was out. I was so startled, like on a visceral level, just shocked. Like, oh, it's a sunny day? What's that? I had completely, it's like the book had swallowed me whole, and I had like suddenly emerged, like totally transformed from it, and like, that's the power of story, right? Story changes you, and you change the world with story. And I think that's so beautiful and so powerful, and you're absolutely right. We have to honor that power. And we don't talk enough about how powerful that is. And it can be very dangerous, because people can use stories to hurt people, just like people can use stories to save people. And I just think we have to really be responsible as writers, as people in publishing, as whoever we are. You know, story is it's a powerful, potent thing. It's not something you can just sling around and pretend it doesn't matter, because it does. It matters so, so much.
Well, so when this idea for the book came along, I mean, did Rick contact you and say, do you have a story idea? Did you already have this idea for, two gods turned into teenagers in Brooklyn and the Caribbean? I mean, was that idea already formulated in your brain?
So I wanted to work with this imprint with Rick since I first heard about it. I've always admired him, like I said. He's always been really generous to me. He's posted reviews of my books that he's enjoyed. He's showed up in signing lines to get autographs from me, which totally, can you imagine? Rick Riordan is in the line to get his book signed from you. Like, it's completely, he's so just loving and generous as a human, and it really blew my mind. And I really wanted to work with him creatively. So I brought him this idea, which originally was just a lot more, it was for a younger audience, and it was a little more straightforward. It was just kind of Mateo and it didn't have the whole backstory. I was working with a different mythology and all this stuff, and he said, you know, we're actually going to take a pivot and go to young adult instead of middle grade. So we're going more for teenagers, an older audience. So would you still want to do this book, but for teenagers? And I was like, absolutely. And immediately the world started getting bigger and bigger and more complex, and the history got deeper, and I just went all the way in. But the other piece that I really pulled from is that I was a paramedic for 10 years in New York City. And so, you know, I was a healer. And at the same time, I was trying to be a musician. So many of those pieces really are just came together to form the tapestry that is this book.
Well, Mateo Matisse is a fantastic character, and San Madrigal.
San Madrigal.
Explain what it is so that people will understand.
So it's this secret island made up, totally imaginary, but that was in the Caribbean. And basically, you know, people found it when they were trying to escape. And so there's pirates there that were on the run. And there were Sephardic Jews that were escaping the Inquisition in Spain. And there's Santeros from Cuba. So all these different people got together and formed basically this new culture out of their different cultures coming together, but still held on to who they were at the same time. And it became this kind of mystical hidden island that nobody could find except the people that were supposed to be there. And over the centuries, that culture grew, and they created their own gods and demons and magic and everything else. And then suddenly the island sank 1 year after Mateo was born. So 15 years before the book starts. And everyone escaped, and they ended up in Brooklyn, as people do. And they brought with them all of their gods and their music and their monsters and everything else and their magic, and they brought it to Brooklyn. You know, and that's the story of so many of our people. You know, that's the story of diaspora.
I thought that was brilliant. Just brilliant. I love it.
Thank you.
Well, as I said, it is wonderful, and it is a very powerful story. And an uplifting story, and I think also for young people, if they read this entire series that Rick has come out with, just going from culture to culture, getting to learn about other cultures, getting to have an appreciation, whether it's for Korean culture or right. You know, whatever. To get rid of all this prejudice or all of this misinformation about people,
exactly.
And just to realize that we're all one and we could all work together, although we need some of this battles going on just to lighten things up. But, you know, it's just, you've captured it, and I'm sure he is very proud of you. Well, I know. I can tell by the cover. When he's proud of somebody, he says, give him a heck of a great cover. And don't
they sure
you love
did
the
that.
Paper?
They sure did.
I love the paper.
The paper. And did you see I don't know if you have the copy that has the map or the in pages.
Oh, yes.
Like a desk.
Oh, yes.
And isn't that beautiful? I love that so much. They did amazing work.
I think, and what it does also by giving young people this kind of a book that is feels so good, that has this, it's tactile, it goes into your system.
Right.
You never forget when you hold a really great book in your hand. You feel the paper,
right.
You feel the importance of it. I know people are going to read it on Kindle, and I understand that, but there really is nothing quite like holding the book in your hand.
That's right. It's very special. And when people put so much care and love into this book, you know, it matters. Like, you feel it when you hold it. It's true.
Well, it is. And I love what you wrote here. What is lost is never lost.
That's right.
And
that is
such... your writing is so clever and so touching. I love the part where you just sort of slow it down. And as I said, in a musical way, that you have this... you know, really wonderful, wonderful tempo, and then you come to a part where it just slows down, and you just
right.
Sort of it's a moment to relish, and I want to thank you so much, Daniel Jose Older, for being on Joy on Paper. The name of the book is Last Canto of the Dead, an Outlaw Saints novel. Well, the final one, according to you, but.
That's right.
No, I don't know about that.
We'll see.
We'll see. But again, it's a beautiful book. wonderful writing. And your website is just your name, right?
My name is DanielJoseOlder.net. And on there, I actually have online classes for writing. So if you're interested in becoming a writer, by all means, check them out. They're video classes, and they can be very helpful for folks. And lots of information about all my books and my comics, my Star Wars writing, all of that is on there, DanielJoseOlder.net.
Yeah, I wanted to mention the comics. I'm running out of time, but people do go to his website because it is fascinating. As I said, I learned to read from Little Lulu Comics.
That was it.
And, of course, Scooby-Doo and Veronica and all of those. But that's how I learned to read, from comic books, because we were poor.
They're great. I love that you said that, because I do think, I know you're running out of time, but I do think it's so important that, like, kids are also encouraged to read comic books. You know, sometimes adults will get very, like, snitty about what is really a book, and comic books and graphic novels are such important parts of literature that need to be honored and recognized, and young people love them and they read because of them, and that's such a gift. So I'm glad you said that.
Absolutely. So everybody go to Daniel's website, and it's DanielJoseOlder.net, and you will find a lot of great stuff there. Again, thank you so much for being on.
It's so great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Take good care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
An amazing author. Fantastic. Look, and he worked as a paramedic. You never know what life will bring you. And you never know when you meet somebody, and maybe they're working as a paramedic, and they're working as a nurse, they're working, you know, they're working in a bakery. You never know. They might turn out to be a great writer, as Daniel certainly has. And boy, oh boy, Rick Riordan loves him. And that's a good reason. Now, we're going to play a book buzz from Bria Burton. And I just love her book buzzes. And then we'll be back, and I'm going to be talking about the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2023 series starter, Rogue Pursuit by B.L. Dean. The young adult novel is book one in the Shades of Starlight series and is available in print and ebook. Now, let's download the book buzz. In the midst of a smuggling run, 17-year-old Perrin Hightower gets recruited to assist Ty, a confed cop. Little does Ty know, the ex-partner he's tracking down for betrayal is also Perrin's ex-boyfriend, a double agent involved in her underground network. One of the best wormhole pilots, Perrin smuggles necessities to the outer colonies. A recent cryptic message from her ex reveals he's on the run with galactic-level dangerous information, and Perrin joins Ty under false pretenses. She needs to find out what her ex knows and get that info back to the network. They travel the wormholes from system to system, and Perrin has to keep up her game of cat and mouse with Ty to hide her true intentions. When they discover the Confed Intelligence Agency has been tracking their movements, Ty confesses secrets of his own. Each new revelation in the case leads Perrin into greater jeopardy and into a deeper conspiracy than she could have imagined. This space opera spy thriller launches readers into a page-turning, swashbuckling adventure with a touch of romance. Author B.L. Dean is a science...
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. And I am back with my next guest, and this is going to be fun for me, Nancy Coco has written a book called Give Fudge a Chance, and it is set in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Hi, Nancy.
Hello.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. It's so fun to talk to you because, of course, your book is set in Mackinac Island, and, you know, I'm from the Upper Peninsula. Are you from the Upper Peninsula?
My mom grew up at Pelston, so it's very close.
Ah, okay. Well, that's why you obviously love the area and have spent some time there on Mackinac Island, which is a, for people who have not been there, you just have to go. It is an amazing vacation destination.
Yes, I just love it.
So, this is book number what in the candy-coated mystery series?
This is book number 11.
11 already. Oh, my goodness. Well, we never get tired of sweets, and that's for sure. And particularly fudge from Mackinac Island, which is the best in the world.
Yes, it's the fudge capital of the world.
So, tell us about this series and tell us about the new book, Give Fudge a Chance.
Sure. My series is set, of course, in Mackinac Island. And what I've got is an amateur sleuth who runs a hotel and fudge shop. And her name is Allie McMurphy, and she gets into all kinds of trouble. She also has pets. So there's those who love pets also will love the book. And there's all kinds of recipes of course, fudge recipes and chocolate recipes, so I have a lot of fun with that.
Well, you certainly do, and they're great recipes. And explain to my listeners who don't know what Mackinac Island is, because it is quite unusual.
It sure is. What has happened is they have banned motorized vehicles, so what you have is kind of that Victorian feel, with horse and buggy taxis, bicycles, and of course you can walk and hike all over lots of state parks.
And of back in the 30s and 40s, it was a destination vacation spot for many people from Hollywood.
Oh, yes, and it has these beautiful Victorian cottages on it and lots of fun. And I don't know if you remember the movie Somewhere in Time, but that was also filmed on the island.
Oh, yes, I do. And, of course, you know, for people who have been there, this is the perfect time because there are lilacs, there are tulips, there are daffodils. It is a glorious time to be on Mackinac Island.
It sure is. And in fact, one of my books is set during the Lilac Festival.
I know, because I remember reading that and thinking, because I was there during the Lilac Festival. It is so incredible. I think the one thing I miss about not living up north, I'm here in Clearwater, Florida, we don't get lilacs, tulips, or daffodils. It's just too hot. But for anybody to see the lilacs there, it's breathtaking.
It sure is. And they have all different kinds, and some of them are quite large. So it's a lot of fun to walk around.
Now, when you came out with the idea, I think, you know, it was just very clever. And when you think about it, when you think about the time that you've spent there, tell us some of the stories about what you've done on the island yourself.
Oh, yes. Well, one of the fun things you can do is you can take a horse and buggy tour of the entire island. So you go around and they show you all, like, the historical places. There are different forts that you can go into. So I was in Fort Mackinac, which is right off Main Street, and that's a lot of fun because they do reenactions. So it's fun for adults, it's fun for kids. Then I've also gone hiking in the state parks, which are beautiful.
Now, it's on Lake Huron, and for people who don't know, who haven't been to Michigan, Michigan is a divided state. You have the Lower Peninsula, which looks like a hand with a in a mitten, and then you have the Upper Peninsula, and they built a bridge to connect the two. For a long time, there wasn't a bridge. And then they built that bridge, which I don't like. I don't like that bridge. Do you like that bridge?
Really? It's actually very close to the Golden Gate Bridge. In fact, I think it's longer.
Oh, much longer.
It might not be higher.
Yeah, much longer, much higher. And if you're on it in a windy day, you don't want to be on it.
Yeah. And the fun part is over Labor Day, they actually walk across it. There's a walk that happens there.
Not me. I was on it one time when the wind was blowing. And that was the last time I ever drove on that bridge. Actually, for people who are afraid, they have drivers who will drive you from one side to the other. Because it gets very windy. But of course, to get to the island, you need a boat, which is a lovely, lovely little trip. And when you get there, if you're, you know, you don't have devices, if you just put away all your devices, I don't know if you actually, when I was there the last time, I don't think they had cell reception, which I think is a glorious thing.
It's
great.
It's like going back in time.
It is. It is. And I remember, who was it? I think it was Jimmy Durante used to go there, and so many of the famous stars spent time on the island and just enjoyed it so much because. For them, I think they were, even in those days, you know, when they were in Hollywood, they'd always get, you know, surrounded by fans, but they could go to the island and be themselves and relax there. And that's how I think the fudge business started, when they started that. And in your story, the candy store is over 100 years old.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit more about your characters, because it's fascinating how you came out over the years, now into book 11, how you've developed your characters.
Well, thank you. In my protagonist, or my amateur sleuth, is, like I said, Allie McMurphy. She actually grew up in Detroit, where her father was an architect, but her grandparents owned and ran the family hotel, which is the McMurray Hotel and Fudge Shop. And it had been in her family for over 100 years. And Allie knew her whole life that she was going to leave Detroit, and she wanted to help her grandparents and take over the hotel and fudge shop. So when she arrived on Mackinac to do this, her grandfather died unexpectedly, leaving everything to her. And she must scramble to, like, modernize the McMurphy a little bit while keeping that 1870s look and feel. So she had a lot of fun with that. And as time has grown, when she first came to the island, she was kind of like an outsider. But as time has grown through the book series, she's worked really hard to be, you know, accepted as an actual islander. And I think towards book 11, she actually is really well accepted.
And she has a love interest?
She does. Interestingly enough, when the book first started, her love interest was Trent Jessup, who was a very wealthy guy who would come. He had a bunch of businesses on the island. But what I found is that my readers really begged me to have her date Ray Manning, and he was a local cop who she, of course, kind of bothered because she was doing his job as an amateur sleuth. So over time, Trent has to go back to Chicago to run the family business, and Allie decides she doesn't want to split her time. She loves Mackinac Island. And what we find is that Rex is actually very attracted to her. And so they do get together by book. I think it's book 9.
Well, isn't it fun that you get input from your fans?
Yes, I loved it. I mean, it was a lot of fun. I had several fan notes that were sent to me via email going, please, 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 I want her to go out with Rex.
I get such a kick out of it. How, and this happens with so many book fans, but particularly, I think, with cozy mystery fans. They get involved with the characters. They start to think up storylines. They start to have ideas of where they should go, what they should say. You know, I think it's such a compliment to an author when fans feel that way, when they feel that, you know, the stories they read are real.
Yeah, and it's been a lot of fun, and I was really liking the fact that, you know, the readers have actually bought into the community, and they really love it. And several of them have actually gone to Mackinac Island. They'd never heard of it before, and they let me know that they really, really enjoyed it.
Well, exactly. It becomes, for fans, when they read a book that they really enjoy, it does become a destination for them to go and be in the places that you're writing about. I know that happened with another Kensington author, Carol J. Perry. Her books, Witch City Mysteries, are set in Salem. And so many of her fans will go to Salem, and they will find the different locations in Salem and stand holding her book and take selfies.
That's amazing. And that's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And, of course, she can put them on her Facebook page, which is very encouraging. And, I mean, Salem has to hire her, you know, for their tourist bureau, because she encourages her readers to go to Salem. And just like your writing encourages people to go to Mackinac Island, because really so many people have not heard about it. But once they do, once they go there, they never forget it. A perfect place for a wedding or a honeymoon. Wow, you can't find during lilac season. I mean, I was married 3 times. I would have had a fourth wedding if I could. Right there in during lilac season, because it is amazing.
And it smells so good. I mean, it really smells good.
There's nothing like it. There's something about real, you know, don't buy that spray lilac stuff. I mean, that'll destroy your nose. You need to be with real lilacs, surrounded by them, when the wind is blowing, and that breeze of the lilacs, it sticks in your memory forever.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
So, people, if you're listening, get one of Nancy Coco's books, a great name you selected for writing about fudge, and take her books and go up to Mackinac Island, find yourself a cozy spot there underneath the lilacs, and just read and read and read and eat fudge. Right?
Yes, one of the fun things about Main Street, too, is it smells like fudge.
Oh.
So you have the lilacs, and then you have that fudgy kind of smell, and it's just wonderful.
People, that is a destination for you. I have a plan for all of you listeners out there. This is what you have to do. You have to head to Mackinac Island and get a bunch of Nancy Coco's books Forget about all your electronic devices and just sit under the lilacs. There are all these lovely, as you said, Victorian places where you can stay, porches with rocking chairs. Oh, my goodness. What a vacation.
Yeah, I agree. It's always a lot of fun to be on the island.
And then everybody send Nancy a selfie of yourself on the island holding one of her books, and she'll put it on her Facebook page, right?
Yes, I'd love to do that.
That's exactly the perfect thing. Perfect for everybody all around, for the readers and for you, because we want to promote, of course, it's funny, you know, in Northern Michigan, for real youpers, you know, I'm a youper.
Yes.
We don't really want to encourage people to come there. It's so funny.
Yeah, it's beautiful in the Upper Peninsula. And the funny part is they call people below the bridge trolls. So my parents were youpers for a while, too.
Yeah, well.
Because they're under the bridge.
Yeah, those the trolls under the bridge. Of course, you know, in the Upper Peninsula, we, in addition to the fudge, we have pasties. So,
those are so good.
Oh my goodness, they are so incredible to have to go on a perfect vacation where you go to the Upper Peninsula. You have Mackinac Island and the lilacs. You have the rest of the mainland of the Upper Peninsula. You have pasties and birch trees. Now that is a perfect vacation.
I agree 100%. There's all kinds of cabins and lakes. It's just a beautiful family destination.
Well, I love this series. It's really great. You always such compliments from everybody. Again, the covers are lovely. It's Kensington, so what do we expect? We expect the best. And it's a wonderful, wonderful book. And this one is called Give Fudge a Chance. It's book 11. And everybody, once you read this one, you can go back and start at the beginning and read all of them because they're all fun. And Nancy, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. And what is your website?
My website is www.nancyjcoco.com. And thank you so much for having me. This has been a blast.
Well, you're involved with, it was Memorial Day, and I was thinking about you because you're involved with women vets. You're a veteran from...
I am a veteran. I was in the Air Force, and so there's a group of us called Women Rompet, and we write all different kinds of books and all different kinds of genre, and they're all veteran females, so it's a lot of fun.
Well, send me some more of your friends who are veterans, because I love to have promote vets. As I said, yesterday was Memorial Day. I'm very involved with the promotion of the F-105 Warriors from Vietnam. I've been working on a project for them for years called Forgotten F-105 Warriors, because they have been forgotten, and nobody has given them the respect and the honor that they deserve. So I feel very close to the Air Force particularly, but all vets, and I'd love to interview more women vets who are also now writing romance fiction, which is a great change.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, again, Nancy Coco, thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today, and keep up the writing, and we'll have you back when you hit a nice dozen, because we need a dozen. That's good. Okay?
Okay. Thank you so much. I've had a lot of fun.
Okay. Bye-bye, Nancy. Great talking to you.
Bye.
Wow, that's so nice. Oh, Mackinac Island. Oh, you don't want to. You get too excited when you get to Mackinac Island. And she's right. You walk down the main street, and it is just like overwhelming. Now, this is a perfect high. I understand that you go to New York City, a lot of the there was Thriller Fest going on, and there you have a different smell. It is not Mackinac Island. Mackinac Island is lilacs and fudge. And when I'm talking fudge, it is, oh, it's unbelievable. The air is fantastic there. So, one of the things I want to say to everyone, go to my Facebook page, because it is really, I'm really working on doing some videos for authors to help promote their books. So it's a wonderful opportunity for you to see how I'm promoting books and what I'm doing for authors. And so it's Radio Joy on Paper. That's my Facebook page. Go there and have a look at it. I think you will enjoy it. Ah, and it was also nice I got to mention Carol J. Perry, and her covers for her books are from Kensington, also fantastic. It's been a wonderful, wonderful day for covers, because when I was talking to Daniel Older, when a publisher loves you and they do an embossed cover for you, you have to feel really, really happy, and he deserves it because he's a great writer. Anyway, what else? Oh, my webpage also is radio-joy on paper. You can go there and see some of my videos and see what's happening in the book world. I'm trying to promote more authors. One of them is, of course, Jerome Preisler. His book, which I love, Civil War Commando, is a book that I hope that you will get. It is a fantastic book. And yesterday was Memorial Day, and I did a special video to honor his main character. The story is about William Cushing, and for any of you who have know people in the Navy, if they served on one of the Cushings, five ships were named after William Cushing over the years since the Civil War. William Cushing was a great American hero. We have not heard enough about him. Jerome Preisler wrote this wonderful book about him. And if anyone knows anyone who has served on one of the Cushings, because there have been five of them, and I'm sure relatives, family, you know, going all the way back to the Civil War, know somebody who has served on a Cushing, I would love to hear from them. You can write me at patsy.radio@joyonpaper, and I would love to hear your story about William Cushing and serving on one of the USS Cushings. They had the destroyers during World War II, two of the destroyers, and one of them was actually sunk at the Battle of Guadalcanal. So it's a wonderful story, and I'm really looking to talk to people who knew people who were on the Cushing, any Cushing. Okay? Anyway, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry and her Haunted Haven series, which is set here in Florida, right in our backyard, and she would, oh, it would be wonderful to if they would film it here. Anyway, everybody, just have a wonderful, wonderful day. Say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. He saluted me. I saluted him. I need to get a hat, and a general's hat, because I should have been a general. Then I can put it on and salute Ed just before I leave the program. Everybody, have a wonderful day. Bye-bye now.